Hey, I'm Ryan John, and welcome to this episode of From the Internet. I'm chatting to Nathan Chan today, the founder of Founder Magazine. Now, it's only been in operation for a few years, but he is killing it, especially on Instagram, going from zero to 110,000 followers in 5 months, and now he's up to 365,000 followers. So it's one man running an online business, an online magazine with staff that he uses all over the world. It's a fascinating story, and we talk about that a lot during this podcast. It is a fascinating story how he started, where he sees this business going, and what advice he has for other people who want to start an online business or an online digital venture. Now, if you want to check out some of Nathan's gear, just search for Founder online. Now, there's no E. So it's just Founder, and you can search that online on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So please enjoy episode 15 of From the Internet. This is Nathan Chan.
The Founder Magazine is a digital publication in the App Store and the Google Play Store, targeting young, aspiring, and early-stage startup founders and novice entrepreneurs. And it's a monthly publication, and it's for mobile and tablet devices. And, you know, we started off just as a magazine, but now really moved into becoming a media brand, where we have a podcast, high traffic social channels, we're moving to training products, and here we've got the magazine too. So that's in essence what we're all about. We're just trying to help as many entrepreneurs as we can.
Now, I read somewhere that the reason you started this is because you felt like you wanted this magazine, but there wasn't there for you. Like, the stuff that you're publishing is the stuff you also want to know. Is that right? And does that make it easier to make it because you're in the same position as your readers?
Yeah, for sure. I felt that there wasn't a publication out there that I could relate to. So, yeah, I just started scratching my own itch, and I knew nothing about entrepreneurship, nothing about apps, nothing about business, nothing about design, nothing about publishing a magazine. And I just kind of every month was showcasing my findings, and 2.5 years later, here we are.
Now, when you said all of those skills that you don't have, I look at the magazine, I listen to the podcast, it looks slick, it sounds great, it seems very professional. How on earth did you start? And was it a big call to just go, oh, look, I'll just learn it as we go? Or, you know, how big was that decision at the start?
Yeah, so I'll be very clear. When I started Founder, I started while I was working my full-time job. So I launched March 5th, 2013. And I just didn't know what would happen. You know, when I started Founder, it was like a side hustle project. And, you know, it was a bit of fun, a scratch my own itch. And I really didn't know what would happen. But I just knew that I was doing work that didn't fulfill me. And I knew that I wanted to become an entrepreneur. And I knew that podcasts were actually really hot. And they're even hotter right now. And I just kind of, it just started with that idea, and I just kind of just ran with it, man. And I think that one of the things that kept me going in the early days was one, the biggest thing that kept me going in the early days was because it was a monthly publication, and it was a paid subscription to read the magazine every month. And people were being, you know, auto direct debited from their credit card and charged. Even if we only had like 10 readers in the first month, I had in the back of my head that I was going to publish another magazine issue next month because that person's paying for it.
Yeah, and was that a good thing to force you to do it? You couldn't get lazy. You had to do it because these people have already paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's commitment and that consistency and that momentum we've built up has served us really, really well. And I just worked it out along the way, Ryan. Like, please, you know, anyone listening to this, I encourage you to go and look at the first issue of Founder Magazine. We didn't even have a successful person on the front cover, and it was a stock image of, you know, a guy just wearing like a, you know, looking like a, doing a Superman pose, like he's about to pull out his shirt.
Yeah.
And it was just totally ridiculous. I'm super embarrassed by it. And yeah, man, like I didn't work it out, and I didn't know how things were going to turn out. I didn't know what the answers were. I didn't know like all the strategies that I have now and this big, you know, 2 to 3 year plan that I have now. It's just kind of like developed over time, and I've just worked it out along the way.
Yeah, well, that kind of answers my next question, because, like you said, you've got the podcast now, which is I love listening to it. It's one of my favorite ones that I listen to when they come out. And also, you've now got the training products and stuff like that, and the masterclasses with Instagram and the Instagram book. When you started, did you ever think that you would be sort of offering those kind of services? Or like you just said, you just, as you go along, you go, oh, that looks like a good idea, and off we go.
Yeah, no, I never thought that. I really didn't. I really thought when I first started it would just be the magazine. Our website was, you know, you said before we jumped on that you complimented our website. And, you know, do you know, like, man, our website was really shitty when we first started.
Yeah, right.
It was, like, really basic. And if anyone wants to check that out, you can use the Wayback Machine, which is, like, this special search thing that allows you, I think it's called the Wayback Machine or the Time Back Machine, and you can look at websites at a certain point in time.
Really?
Which is really cool. So yeah, if you look at the Wayback Machine and have a look at a founder website, you'll see that it's like really basic, really ugly. It's just like a simple one pager.
Yeah, and, right. Well, it's archive.org/web.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm nervous. I'm going to go look at my old blog on that. Now, you said when you started that you were still doing your full-time, like a full-time job. Does that mean that maybe from when the business started, it wasn't the biggest leap, but rather the day you quit your full-time job? Like, do you remember that? How were you feeling? And was that the all-in moment?
Yeah, so that was pretty scary, man.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it was scary. Like, you know, the things that made me move was, one, I'd almost replaced my income, and, you know, we could cover operating costs on a monthly basis. And two, my mentors told me it was time and I was ready. And three, I had enough savings, like at least 6 months worth of savings.
Yep, right.
Of my monthly income from my day job.
Yeah, and would that be to other, if you were to give advice to people in the same situation, are those the kind of three things you'd want to tick off? You're covering your operating costs, you've got enough savings to live off, and the income is the same as what you're earning in your day job. Is that maybe three sort of ticks if anyone else in your situation should look for?
Yeah, I think so. I probably should have left earlier, to be honest, Ryan, but I'm a very risk-averse person that...
Says the person that started a magazine with no magazine skills. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I really like the game chess, right? And, you know, you always want to be, like, thinking how your opponent's going to move 3 steps ahead or even 10 steps ahead. And I'm always thinking how I can move 10 steps ahead. So maybe I'm a good planner. I'm not sure. But that's how I always operate.
What did your parents say when you went full-time? Because I know for me, I have an honours degree in finance, and I used to work in a big firm. And I said, I'm quitting all that, and I'm going to earn a tenth of my wage and go and work in radio. And I know that was a pretty interesting day for my family, who supported me through uni. So I guess it's a bit different because you were already earning money and the business was up and started. But I find sometimes not only doing it yourself is tough, but then explaining to your close friends and family that you're taking this big risk, that can also be a tricky one.
Yeah, for sure. Like, especially in the early days when I first started, my parents didn't really understand, and they just thought I was an idiot. And, you know, as time went on, they could see the kind of work that I was doing and the things that I was doing. And my mum always likes to, she's always like, oh, do you have any interesting emails and stuff like that? So, like, I sometimes send her emails and stuff because both of my parents are retired. So, yeah, look, they, you know, my family, I don't come from an entrepreneurial family. So, yeah, for them, it was quite a weird kind of move. But by the time it got to, you know, me leaving my day job, they knew that I would be okay because, I guess, you know, I could show them some results and show them some things for my hard work. And, yeah, but especially in the early days, yeah, a lot of my friends didn't get me, my family didn't get me, and I even remember the first day we launched, March 5th, 2013, it still feels like it was yesterday, man. I remember I was walking with my housemate to go and get dinner with his girlfriend, now fiance, and go get fish and chips.
Yeah.
And I told him that I launched, the magazine in the App Store, and I told them that I made $5 on my first day, and they were laughing at me. And they weren't laughing with me, man. They're laughing at me.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the amount of money we're making.
Well, a lot of people wouldn't make a single cent on their first day. That's like, I don't know, I'd take the $5.
Yeah, man. Like, that was the best $5 I ever earned.
Yeah, absolutely. First dollar is always the hardest.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so it's funny like that, you know, because I think the road to, you know, the journey of an entrepreneur is a very lonely one.
Mm.
And that's why it's really important that you need to surround yourself with like-minded people that really get you. And, you know, these are people that are on the same journey as you at the same kind of level that you are. And then there's then also people that are ahead of that journey and then also people that are below that journey so you can give back, which is really important too.
Yeah. Did you think... actually, did you know anyone sort of in this community? Did you study entrepreneurship? Did you just find it interesting and that's why you got into this? Or was it as simple as sending someone an email and going, hey, mate, loving what you're doing. Do you mind if I buy you a cup of coffee and ask a few questions?
So I didn't know really anyone that was an entrepreneur. I knew friends of friends and stuff like that.
Yep.
But no, I've had to build my network from scratch, man. And I'm actually quite proud of my network. I'm very privileged to have a lot of the connections and a lot of the people that I can just call up and ask for advice. And that's purely come from a mentality that I learned very quickly was serving first and asking later. So, in fact, it is good to...
I was going to say, just for a sec, could you just explain that in terms of like, instead of saying, hey, mate, can I have your help, but saying, you know, what can I do for you?
Yeah, or not even asking what can I do for you, but just doing stuff to help that person. Just simply doing stuff to help that person and not expecting anything in return. And then if you did want something in return, then you would email them asking for that coffee catch up or
yeah.
something.
What's
like
an
that.
Example of something that you could do for someone who you don't know?
Yeah, look, if you have someone that you respect, like an entrepreneur that you really, really respect, there's so many things you can do. You could, you know, they might have a book. If they have a book, you can purchase their book. You can leave them a 5-star review on Amazon. They might have a typo in one of their blog posts or one of their emails, and you can let them know. You can send them a gift in the mail. You can promote their stuff and tell your friends. There's so many things, like you can purchase one of their products or whatever. Like, there's so many things you can do. You can work for them for free. Like, there's so many things you can do to serve first and ask later. I think it's just, a common misconception that a lot of people look at entrepreneurs as if, like, oh, they're up here and I'm down here. I don't have anything to offer. But there's always something you can offer.
Yeah, right. That's some great advice. Now, one of the best things about the magazine, and I don't know if this is what was a strategy or just the way it's turned out, but you've got some big name interviews. Is that a strategy or is that just something that you love? Why? And is that, in your opinion, the big sort of strength of it?
I think it's something I worked out very early that utilizing influencers can be a really, really powerful way to build trust from a marketing perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So we landed Richard Branson. He was probably our biggest interview that we landed in the early days. And I pitched his team 4 months in, and he said yes, and we featured him for issue number 8. And that I used that feature as a massive springboard to get other big-time influencers in the entrepreneurship niche. Yeah, look, I think as a brand, like founder as a brand, definitely has massively helped for others if they come across the magazine or anything that we're doing, for them to be like, oh, okay, where the hell, like, who the hell are these guys interviewing Richard Branson, Damon John, Seth Godin, and Tim Ferriss? Like, you know, these guys must be legit.
Yep.
But I think that's only one small part of the puzzle in terms of the growth strategy, man. And I'm happy to go down that path with you if you want. But, yeah, to answer your question, it is one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I'd love to know what the plans are, because it's always obviously you need to have a plan to know where you're going. But then on the other hand, you've said a few times already that you've just been going along and going, oh, maybe we need this, or maybe we should try a podcast. And it hasn't kind of worked out to plan thus far, but it always, the plan keeps changing and evolving. Is it tricky to make 2 to 3 year plans because who knows what's down the track, or is it still important to sort of aim for something?
Yeah, I think it's really important to set goals and come up with solid plans. And I still do that to this day. Like, you know, my first plan for the first year was to build up Founder and just focus on the magazine, and so I could leave my day job. And I did that. And then when I left my day job, I was like, okay, well, what's next for Founder? You know, we could keep working on the magazine, or what can we do? And then, you know, I looked at where we could leverage content, and, you know, we were already doing these amazing interviews. Why not, you know, get our best interviews and put them on the podcast? And then it was like, okay, well, you know, what does a media brand look like? You know, what does a multifaceted platform look like? I think that is where it's at. And I know I read a lot of articles and did a lot of research, spoke to a lot of people. I'm like, okay, well, we need to build up our social media channels. We need to have a high traffic website. We need to build our email list. And then from there, I've kind of been just like, okay, you know, these are the core basics of a content house. You know, I've got the magazine, it's the face of the business, and that's our flagship product.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the podcast. It's a great way to build trust. It's a goodwill thing, and a lot of people are loving it. Then we've got the blog, and we've got all these social media channels. You know, then really what's next? And then, you know, our community, are constantly asking us for help for certain things, and they're constantly giving us feedback and letting us know where, you know, what we can and can't do, and what we should and shouldn't be doing. And it just so happens that a lot of people were wanting to know how we were crushing on Instagram. So
instead
of me doing consulting or anything like that, I created a course, a video training course.
And I downloaded your ebook. I don't know the exact title, but you've got an actual product, which is an ebook on how to use Instagram for businesses.
Yeah. So that's a free ebook. In the biz, we call that a lead magnet. And
So the theory of people go, oh, this is great and really interesting and really helpful, I'll check out the magazine. Is that what you mean by that, or?
Yeah, so a lead magnet is a way to get someone's email address. It's a way for them to sign up to your newsletter. So in exchange for them signing up to your newsletter, you give them a gift. And that ebook, you know, we don't charge for that. I was actually going to charge for that, and it cost us at least $3,000 US to put together, but we made it free. And you know, in doing that, it's massively grown our email newsletter and database. And it does eventually lead to people wanting to purchase one of our courses. And then now we're just like, okay, these courses work really well from a monetary standpoint, and our community is loving it. Let's create more courses. Let's find out how else we can further serve and help our community. And I think that's the kind of moves I'm making. So I do strategize, I do plan, but now I've really, really got like a proper long-term plan that I don't think is going to change, Ryan, because I think when you first start a business, you're always seeking, you know, a solid business model.
Yep.
And I've just still been seeking, but I've still been building the Founder brand at the same time, and I've just put more assets underneath it as time has gone on. And I haven't really changed course so much. I've just added other elements to the brand.
You said the magazine, at least for the first part, was always going to be the major product. Do you see that with the courses as well, in terms of both brand awareness and revenue? You know, will they become 50-50? Will the courses maybe take over? Or that just depends on what comes in? Or that's, again, part of the planning?
Yeah, look, I can confidently say, and it's a great question because I've never answered this before, I can confidently say that the courses will and currently do overtake how much the magazine generates from a revenue standpoint. And I know that the online education space is a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Massive, huge,
and
yeah.
I know that the university model is broken, And I think that we are no better positioned than anyone else, or far better positioned than majority of companies out there to help from an entrepreneurial education standpoint. So, yes, I think that there's a massive opportunity there, not from only from a revenue generating and profitability standpoint, but also for our community in terms of serving them, and this is what they're asking for. But the magazine will always stay. That will never go, because that is the face of our business. That's our flagship product. However, you know, when it comes to what is Founder, I think want people to think that at the end of the day, we equip entrepreneurs, we help entrepreneurs, whether that's through the magazine, whether it's through our free podcast, whether it's through our training products, whether it's through our blog or social content. I think the mission hasn't changed, and I think we'll still always publish the magazine because that's the face of our business, but I think the real money will be made off the back end, and that's the training products and courses.
Yeah. Now, I was actually going to ask this question before when we were talking about when you just went into it and you just sort of started. And then you just said the words there that the university model is broken. And in terms of entrepreneurship, you know, I don't disagree with that. What do you think about people who are maybe studying, not business, but maybe like journalism and stuff, the fact that you have made a pretty successful so far and still a long way to go media product without, you know, maybe a journalism background? Is it best to just start making content, or is it still good to have those underlying skills?
I can't comment because I never done a journalism degree, you know, but...
But maybe that's the answer.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I do know there are bits and pieces you pick up from uni. I've come from 2 degrees. I came from a Bachelor of Business / Information Systems, so IT, and then a Master's of Marketing. And, you know, I haven't used any of that.
I have an honors degree in finance and work in radio, so yeah, I know that feeling.
So, you know, that cost me like 70K in hex debt.
Although, is it a bit rich for you to say that you running your own business in media and having a master's degree in marketing, surely you learnt some things in the marketing masters that you use now?
No, I can promise you nothing, because it's so different. It's so backwards. It's so different, man. So yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, I don't think you could ever not go to university and study medicine and not become a doctor. Like, that's what you have to do.
You have to
like,
do that. Yeah. Yeah. I want my people building bridges to have engineering degrees. There are some shortcuts.
Yeah. I don't think you can learn that stuff. I don't think you'd be self-taught. But I think when it comes to building a business, depending on the kind of business, majority of the time it can be self-taught. And I guess I am kind of living proof. And there is also something else I'd like to touch on that, Ryan.
Yep.
It's, you know, I think more than ever it's so difficult to get a job, like if you're a university student. And more than ever, you require experience. So if you want a job in journalism, you know, why not create your own content? That's one of the best ways that you're going to make yourself a strong candidate for a job. You know, I'd hire somebody that shows me that they're keen and they're creating their own stuff already and they're super passionate. They've already, like, doing all sorts of content, you know, as opposed to just going to the uni, doing what they're told, and getting a degree. I don't care actually how good your marks are, to be honest.
Yeah. And
I care about your attitude.
Yeah. And just on that, are you, I think, because the reason I came across you in the first place was that you know my roommate, and he said that you went, is it right that you went to India and you met the guy who was doing a lot of stuff for you online, and you never met him, but you went over to his wedding?
Yeah, that's correct. So our art director, Karan, he's been with us from the beginning. He was the first person I'd ever worked with, really, because when I first started the magazine, I was doing everything but the design, and he's doing the design. And he's a super talented guy. And, he got married in Chennai in India, and me and my girlfriend, we went to his wedding. And I've never met him before.
Unbelievable story. And do you use people, like, do you outsource that sort of stuff a lot now? Or do you have a team? Do you have an office? Like, what's the setup of Founder?
Yeah, we're still pretty lean. Like,
is that a good thing?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think we're very lean, and that allows for a really solid really solid profit margins and operating costs. If we do outsource, we leverage overseas talent wherever we can.
Is that because it's cheaper, or it's better, or both?
Both.
Yeah.
It isn't always better though. Like,
you can claim a wedding trip on tax.
exactly. They reach him on track. But yeah, look, I just hired a full-time virtual assistant in the Philippines, Angela, and man, she's going to be an absolute weapon in the team.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I believe that I can train her up just as good as someone being on here on the ground as a full-time assistant for me or an administration person. I hope that answers your question. It's not that the talent is better overseas. It's just I think it's just smarter to do that, especially if you're bootstrapping a business, and you're an online business and you want to keep your operating costs low. So yeah, what does the founder team look like? We have Jonathan, who's on the ground with me. He's our full-time content crafter and marketer. Mm-hmm. And founder just operates out of a co-working space in Melbourne. It's called Revolver Creative. And I don't even go there, I only go there a couple of days a week. I get most of my work done at home. And Jonathan goes in there when he pleases as well. And but for the most part, because we have an online business, we don't need to meet face-to-face.
Yep.
And then we have Karan, who's our graphic designer of the magazine and does a lot of our other branding. Then we have Aaron, who's Karan's just a contractor as well. Aaron, who's another contractor that I use to design our website and a whole ton of other graphic design stuff. And he's in Brisbane. And then we have Tate, who's our editor of the magazine. He's just a contractor too. Then we have, anywhere between 5 to 10 writers that we're constantly working with every month, and they're just all contractors too. And then we have an AV editor in Hungary who edits our podcasts and all our video content. And then we have Angela, who's our new full-time virtual assistant. And then we have Cherry, who's a part-time virtual assistant that I use as well. So they're both from the Philippines. And that's what our team looks like for now. The business is growing really fast, and we are looking to hire more people. But for now, I think, once I train up Angela, we should be on top of things for a while.
Is there ever a certain time of the day where every single person is working at the same time?
I'm not sure. I never really thought about that one. That's a good question. Not sure, man. Probably not. Because everyone's there's a lot of contractors. Yeah. So, people get paid per project. And, for example, Aaron, he's a brilliant web designer, brilliant graphic designer. And, if I need him to do something for me, I'll ask him. He invoices me, I pay him. He gets the job done and that's it. And he keeps moving kind of thing,
Yeah, great. Yeah. I noticed something when I listen to a lot of your podcasts. I love podcasts. And when you're interviewing, and I think that I am personally, I don't know if guilty is the right word, because I think it could be a good thing. What I'm getting at is sometimes you ask questions and it sounds like and it feels like that you are asking because you want to know the answer for your business. Is there ever a line? And one of the best examples was when you spoke to Ed Dale from Magcast. Is there a line between a podcast interview that's content and a mentoring session?
Yeah, of course.
Or is there a theory of if I want and need to know this answer, then so will my audience?
I think both. But when you talk about a mentoring session, I think you have to remember too that anybody that comes on the podcast, like the founder podcast, mm-hmm. they get decent exposure, man.
Yeah.
So, we mail out that podcast to our email database of 75,000 people, and it's growing at a rapid rate. That's brilliant press. If someone paid for an EDM, that would cost thousands and thousands of dollars, even yeah. tens of thousands of dollars. And then, we've got quite a decent sized audience for our podcast. So I guess on the guest standpoint, there is no like, I think it's still a win-win.
Well, definitely a win-win, but I just mean in terms of, for like, you know, lots of your audience will have small businesses, but they won't have small businesses in the online magazines game. So when you ask specific questions about your business, because I'm the same, because especially on this podcast, I sometimes ask because I'm nosy and I want to know the answer, and I sometimes go, but would other people care? Or do I just want to know this for me?
Yeah, look, don't get me wrong. I definitely do that, man.
Yeah.
But I think the best interviews are like conversations like me and you are having now, and the interviewer is just treating it and has the mindset of just open curiosity. So if you want to ask a question, I think it's best you ask it, because 9 times out of 10, you just got to follow your gut. Or yeah, 10 times, you know, 100% of the time, you got to follow your gut. And wherever the conversation is leading, you have to be like, okay, if that's a question I want to ask, you have to be true to yourself, whether it is for you, but it would be relevant to your guest because of in context of the conversation, I think.
Yeah.
And we actually have, I actually have had a lot of feedback from some of our listeners that say, Nathan, you asked the questions like as if you knew what I wanted you to ask. And that's just me asking questions within context of the conversation. But also, I always try and position myself as somebody that doesn't know anything and yeah. being very naive. And I think
I'm very good at doing that naturally, purely because I don't know very much.
But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And but do you think, just on that sort of topic, that you are your audience, in that your audience is young people who are starting up businesses and you're kind of in the same boat? That's got to be an advantage, right? Because I couldn't imagine how bad it would be producing content and a product that's not for at least someone in your demographic. That's got to be an advantage, right? When you're thinking about what's going to be in next month's magazine, like, if you want to know it, then they'll want to know it.
Yeah, for sure. But we're all on different journeys, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm just purely just following my gut, you know, a lot of what I do, man, it's all just following my gut, and it's got me this far. So yeah, like, if I think something's cool, I'm going to ask that question. If I think something's cool, we're going to talk about it. We're going to cover that in the magazine. We're going to interview this person. Sometimes I might not make the right decision for, you know, 90% of my community, that but 10% would like it. So it is difficult to please everyone, and it is difficult to know what everyone wants to hear and what everyone will find value. But I do hope that, you know, every step of the way, somewhere, somehow, any form of content that we do put out, that somebody does get some gold from it, no matter where they are on the entrepreneurial journey.
Now, on that, I'm going to ask a question purely for my own benefit.
Yeah, shoot, man.
You guys, Instagram, unbelievable. Unbelievable, the stuff you've done on Instagram. Do you know off the top of your head what the sort of follower count is at the moment?
I think it's close to 350K.
Unbelievable. So I guess from my point of view, if there was one tip that I or anyone else listening to increase their kind of, you know, engagement on Instagram, what would it be? I know you've got, you can head to the founder website and you can download the book we spoke about earlier, but if there's one takeaway point.
Yeah.
Or is it more than that? Is it too much?
There's a lot more than that. I could talk about it all day, but there is one thing. But yeah, first, if anyone does want to download that epic guide, like a step-by-step guide that we come up with, you can go to foundermag.com/free, foundermag.com/free, and you can get the ebook there.
And it's great, and it's fascinating, and I love the case studies as well. I reckon they put all the stuff that you talk about before that into motion, and you just go, yep, and it's a great read.
Oh, well, thank you, man. So I think probably the biggest thing, if I could boil it down to one, it's just about the content, man.
Yep.
Like, if you create absolutely brilliant content that looks great and you're super consistent, that's going to hold you in good stead.
Yeah. Now, is there a difference between if you're on Instagram as a person or an Instagram as a brand, and does it get tricky? Because I know for me, like, I'm in media and supposed to be like a personality or whatever. So my business and my person is the same thing. Does that make it trickier and different? Because I know a lot of your stuff is based towards brands and businesses.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think no matter what you do, whether you're a brand or you're a person and you have your own personal brand, you need to be providing value and you need to be doing thought leadership type stuff. And as long as you do that, and as long as you serve, you're currently constantly serving your market, and providing value, I think that will hold you in good stead. So if you look at someone like Seth Godin, one of my favorite entrepreneurs and marketers.
Yep. Unbelievable thinker, Seth Godin. He's our business, though, one of the leaders of our business, or Southern Cross Stereo. They love to reference a lot of his stuff.
Yeah. So like when I was in the States a few months ago, I was actually lucky enough to catch up with him for coffee. Wow. And long story short, I think if you look at what Seth does, he's just really, really good at being consistent and providing a ton of value. And he has that daily email that he sends. He does one blog post a day. He's been doing it for years.
Yeah, man. Sometimes only a paragraph or so. Platform.
What's that? Sorry?
Sometimes only just a paragraph or so, but it's always valuable, isn't it?
Yeah. Super, super valuable. But the thing to take away there is he's just got one platform. He doesn't choose multiple platforms. Email and blogging is his platform. That's his thing. Writing is his platform. Writing is his thing. So for us at Founder, our biggest platform right now is Instagram. It's our best source of customer acquisition right now. So we've just got really good at it, man. So I think people need to be clear around their platform too.
Do you think sometimes that people get carried away with platform first and then go, oh, I want to be, this is the platform for us, and then they figure out the content rather than the other way around?
It's hard to say. I think you just got to test, man. Like you just got to test and keep seeking and finding that customer acquisition channel that works best for you.
Like, would you have planned that Instagram was going to be your one, or you're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and you worked them all hard, and then Instagram takes off, and you went, "Yep, this is us."
Yeah, didn't plan it, and pretty much exactly like what you explained happened. Yeah, we just tried Instagram, and then it was like, yeah, boom, that's us.
Yeah, great. All right, now I really appreciate your time, Nathan. It's been fascinating chatting to you. I could chat all day. I'm a business nerd. I love this stuff. But is there? And I know we've sort of touched on sort of plans for the future, and you said you've got a 2 or 3 year sort of plan and some goals and stuff. But have you ever considered the end game for Founder? Would you sell it? Could it be picked up by someone else? Would you want to diversify? Would you want it to grow it? Is there kind of a dream end goal, or are you just loving the journey? Because I think that's a trait of entrepreneurs, is they just love the journey and the story just as much as they do, thinking about too far down the track.
Yeah, so look, I'm loving the journey. We have had a couple of buyout offers that I didn't entertain. And for now, I think we're just getting warmed up. Like we're just scratching the surface with the kind of stuff we can do and the kind of work, like the body of work that we're producing and leaving as a legacy. So for now, the next 2-3 years is going to be a lot more content, a lot more epic content, a lot more interviews with hard to reach people, and just continuing to promote and spread entrepreneurship and really help and equip entrepreneurs however we can. By the end of this year, I wanted our reach across all of our platforms. So, all of social, all of our website traffic, all our podcast and our magazine, everything. I wanted that to collectively hit and reach 1 million people. And we're almost about to bypass that. So, in the next 2 to 3 years, I'd hope that gets to a lot more than 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that, and I plan for that to not only touch millions of people, but also inspire, those millions to spread the word of entrepreneurship and create a ripple effect that, our work goes further than just reaching, our reach, but, continues to spread. And, I do see a massive opportunity for this courses stuff. So, you know, you will see a lot more courses coming out from us, and you will see a lot more cool stuff and fun stuff we're going to do. And, you know, whether I sell it or not, I right now I have no serious plans to sell it because I'm just having a ton of fun. But I am told by my mentors that one day you will want to sell. One day there will be an end game, and you'll get sick of it or something like that, and you'll move on and do something else. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't know. But for now, I'm just having a ton of fun, man, and just trying to help as many people as I can through our work.
Yeah, great. All right, now, one last question, and I ask most people listen to the podcast at the end. Actually, before we do that, Nathan Chan, it's founder with no E, so founder mag.com. You can check it out there, and there's links to the blogs and the podcast and the courses and everything we've spoken about. But Nathan, if you could tell yourself when you were 18 anything, knowing what you know now, what's one tip you'd like to tell your former self?
Travel more. Don't go to uni and start working on your business and be mentored by someone that's a super successful entrepreneur.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people are like, I just wish I had started earlier when they ask that question. And it doesn't even matter what kind of field they're in. I think a lot of people wait for the right opportunity or the right when they think's the right time, but often there's no such thing. You just got to go do it. And it sounds like you are another person like me who waited a bit, got themselves an unneeded hex debt, and kind of ended up in the same spot anyway.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's funny though, Ryan, because it is easy to say, like, start earlier, but then I see people that are much younger than me that are starting businesses. And I can just see that they just don't have the level of maturity required to make it.
Yeah, right.
Now, I don't mean to sound arrogant by that by any means. What I mean is, I think to build a business that lasts, you need a certain level of maturity to make it work. Like, don't get me wrong, there's some really super young kids that build super successful businesses and they make it work. But far too often, I seem to see these really young kids, they start businesses and they don't stick with it. They don't have the patience. They're just all over the place. They're scrappy. And it's not because of their skills. It's just because I believe their level of maturity. And, it's funny because I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now if I didn't do my university degree. Just by sheer chance, you know, I started doing the work that I'm doing. And I think, you know, every single thing that you do, whether it's, you know, for me, like a job at McDonald's that I did, or, yep, you know, the shitty IT job that I did, you know, all of those things, all of those experiences have equipped me and skilled me up some way, shape or form to do the work that I'm doing today. And I might not have had, you know, the basic stuff and the maturity being the age that I am to be able to do the work I'm doing today, to be able to handle that kind of stress. And, you know, all those little things like being super patient and being super focused and all those things. So, you know,
that is a really good point that I hadn't really thought about. So that's it. It's a really good point. All right, Nathan, congratulations on all your success, mate. It's so impressive. You mentioned there, so it was March 2013 that you launched. So it's only about 2.5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. To think the Instagram followers, the social following, the quality of content, the names of interviewees you've had, it's really impressive, mate. Congratulations on everything so far, and all the best for the future. I really appreciate you chatting today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ryan. It was a really fun interview, and happy to come back anytime.